Welcome back, Noodle Squad. It has been like 3 weeks, 2 weeks since I've been on here. And I'm really excited for today's episode. Well, yeah, because first of all, this is my second guest ever. I'm having a guest today. This is a guest episode. And he actually has a really special story. Or I guess it's a special story. Yeah, it's a special story. He's a special person who has been through a lot the last, gosh, I want to say like, I guess it's been like 6 months? No, 4 months? I don't know. We'll have him discuss the timeline. But his name's John Samet, and he is a triathlete out of Perth, I think, Perth, Australia. I met him through just the triathlon circle. And last year, well, I'll have him describe the whole story. But yeah, so this is our second guest ever on Noodle On with Noel. And I'm excited to have him. Okay, so this is John Samet. Have him turn his camera on. Hey, John.
G'day. Hi, everyone. Excited to be on the show. Thanks, Noel.
Yes, thank you. Or you're welcome. It is like 9 p.m. We're at polar opposites. It's 9 p.m. in Perth, right?
Yes.
Wait, are you in Perth?
Yeah, it's quarter to nine, I think, so fairly late, but I've been going to bed a bit later these days because I don't have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go train.
So it's interesting because I actually first kind of heard about yours. You started the Ogin. Are you the founder of it, the Ogin Squad, Ogin Squad in Perth?
I would say I'm a founding member, but I've probably main driving force of it the last 4 or 5 years or when we started it.
Okay, because I remember first kind of seeing you guys in the first last year. So last year I had my best ever race in Western Australia, and there is this group there who I kind of saw, which was this Ogin Squad group. One of their members, Nick Thompson, came in second or third? Third. I don't know. Second or third. Anyways, long story short, that's kind of where I saw John or heard about John in this little group. But you are a serious athlete, though. Or haven't you done like a 109 half marathon or something?
Yeah, I've had some good results. I think seeing Nick do so well at Busso was sort of my driving force to get back into pro racing and that sort of thing. But yeah, I used to do, like, back in the day, I used to do ITU racing, which is like the short course draft legal stuff that people try to go to the Olympics for. And then I sort of gave it away through COVID and as people do when they're sort of lost, they decide that they're going to go get a proper job and work in the corporate world. So I've been doing that the last couple of years. Busso saw Nick just absolutely smash it there. And I thought, maybe I like being a supportive friend, but maybe I can support him even more by, racing with him and, us having a good blast together.
And so that's pretty much when I started kind of following you guys and looking at this, and you were killing it. You did like fifth at, what is the race before it, before Busselton? It was, not fifth, fourth, or what was the 70.3 before Busselton where you had your crash?
I did Sunny Coast in September.
You did like really good, right?
Yeah, so like that was my first sort of long course race since I stopped triathlon quite a while before that. But I never thought I'd do that well, and that race was really like it was like a supernatural performance, I felt like, because I hadn't had the perfect training and I was trying to work full time and came in fourth there, and I was only off first. So it sort of it gave me a good kick in the ass to think, I can probably do this as like a proper career and not just have it as like a side hustle.
Yeah, because that, so that gave you confidence because you were like, you, and then, so you were like, you killed it. And then you had Busselton coming up, right? Another 70 point. Was it the 70.3? You were doing that, the half, right? The pro half. Yeah. And so you were like, you were as fit as you were fit, very fit, going into Busselton. But this is where I wanted to, so this is where John's story kind of starts, because I want to say, first of all, Busselton's a beautiful race. It's an amazing race. I do love that race. But you had, I remember even, I think I even put you in the tracker. I had you in the tracker. I had a lot of people, and there's a ton of people who were doing this race, because it was last December, it was the Ironman Pro Series like ending race or something. I'm not quite sure. But yeah, so you didn't finish. You got out of the swim, and I'm very curious about this. This podcast has no, has an explicit sign, so you can say the gory details if you want to, or leave it all out if you want to, leave anything out if you want to. But you got in a wreck at like less than like what, like 5 minutes into the bike or something.
So that was pretty accurate. So it was, Busselton 70.3, and it was the Oceania Championships, I think, for the 70.3
Big race,
distance.
yeah.
But it was a big race. There was a big field. I had like a fairly decent swim. I think I came out sort of in the top 10. But I did have like a gap between me and the front swim group. So I probably had to make up about a minute's worth on the bike, and I could see sort of Nick a little bit ahead of me. I think he was about 200 meters ahead of me, and I thought, I'm gonna put my head down and just sort of drill it and try and get onto Nick's wheel, because that's my ticket up to the front of the pack. And started the bike, and we got out onto the main sort of road as you head out of Busselton. And that road's fairly straight. There's not too much really like technical, but I could see like a couple of guys that were coming up to me, and I thought, I need to overtake these guys, because I don't, I want to get past them and, get onto Nick's wheel. And I overtook the first guy, and
Do you know who it
because
was?
I think it was Kurt Wesley. So I overtook
Okay.
Kurt Wesley, and then I could see the next person that I wanted to overtake. So I was still over like right on the right-hand side of the road.
Right.
And we'll go on a fair clip at that stage, because we had a tailwind. So I was going, 50 plus K an hour. And I went to make the pass on Reese, who was the other person that I was overtaking. And it was like a split moment lapse in concentration, and I hadn't even realized that there was a roundabout that was coming up. And before the roundabout, there's an island, and on the island there's a giveaway sign. And essentially, as I overtook Reese, I was too far out on the right side of the road. I basically didn't even have a chance to see the sign. And the last thing I remember, like from riding, was Reese yelling like, "Johnny!" And and then I hit the giveaway sign at like 50K an hour. Zero reaction time at all, because I just was so unaware that that was going to happen. It was completely like me being, I've never, I'm a fairly good bike handler, I'd like to
Well,
think.
that was one of my questions. Was this your first bike wreck ever, or?
Like first proper one. I used
Okay.
to race bikes when I was younger, and like you'd have a fall off every now and again, but like it's
Right.
just a graze, and it's not, it's not a
Road
big deal.
rash. Yeah.
And I hadn't had a crash for years, and I just feel like this, it's just out of the blue for me, especially, and in such a like innocuous way, because it wasn't like a, sharp left-hand
Right.
corner or something like that. It was literally just like, me not paying attention for that moment, and then just bang, and I've hit the pole. And as soon as I hit the pole, like, my whole left side of my leg just took all the force, and like I felt like when I hit it, you know how you're like your legs in like a cycling position, I felt like it hit it like in that sort of triangle angle, and like hit the pole, mm-hmm. and then basically like ripped my, you know, everything basically collapsed in my leg, and like knee came back, femur came back,
ooh.
Tibia, fibula, all came back. So I felt it all come down my leg, and I knew like when I was flying through the air, I was like, I've just broken every bone in my leg. Like I just knew it, even though like the pain and everything hadn't hit me yet. What were you going to say?
Did you, I was going to say a couple things. First of all, I'm trying to picture where you crashed. Is it before you even get out to the, into the wood, like the woods? It's like still back in town, right? Like
yeah.
I think I know exactly where you're talking about. Kind of a busy spot, right? Where people are coming back in.
Yeah. There's like two or three roundabouts to start. And I think I made it through the first two. And I think it was the last roundabout, completely oblivious to.
Did you hit your head? Because you said you passed out, right?
No, so I didn't pass out. Like the.
You didn't pass out. Okay.
I hit the pole, and I was conscious the whole time. I hit the pole with my leg, and then I flew forward, facing forward. And like, because it was so fast, the impact, like I landed how my arms were on the bars. So like I grazed all like the back of my hands, and came down, and it probably saved me from hitting my head, which was good. And it also meant that I could tell everyone that my head was all right, and it was just my leg that had suffered all the damage.
Yeah. So who saw you crash? The guys you just passed saw you crash then, right?
Yeah. So they saw me crash, and I think they probably thought it wasn't as bad as what it was. I think like in hindsight, they were probably like feeling bad because they didn't stop, but I don't like blame them for
right,
like, because I feel like if I was in their position, I probably would have done the same thing. So the people that found me were like just spectators on the side of the road, and from there they just organized the ambulance and everything like that. But I remember the feeling when I hit the road, I was just thinking to myself, like, the road is so bloody hard, like it's really hard. And then I'm like, I'm lying on my stomach, like basically facing back the way I came. And there was like a moment where I was like, oh, you know what? I'm going to like try and get up and see if I can walk this one off and maybe get back into the race. And I, you know, I went to push myself up with my arms, and I was like, my legs aren't following at all. And I looked back, and like my leg was basically like obliterated, like bones sticking out of my leg, like my femur had snapped, so it was sticking out like both sides of my quad, and then same with like my foot and my tibia and fibula. It was broken in a few different places, but like the foot was like wrapped up like underneath my other leg, and so it was just like a really gruesome picture behind me.
I was gonna say, is that image in your head, like, do you still think of that? Like, yeah,
that was
that's
like literally every day it goes through my mind, like the whole crash and everything, because I was conscious for it, like that right. whole thing, like, yeah, it just lives rent free in my head. It's not really a sight you want to see, like when you're, you know, like you look after your body, you like put good food in it, and then, you know, your body's a temple, and then this is what happens, and it's not the.
Well, and that's really, I agree. That's also what's so fun. Well, getting hurt when you're like that in shape and you work so hard. And then I guess like one of the things was, what was the first thing that I remember you telling me? You said you were losing blood also, right? Like you, it was like turning into like an actual, like it's obviously an emergency if you're seeing your femur or seeing your bones, but it sounded like, I think you first told me you were losing a lot of blood on the side of the road, right?
Yeah. So I actually didn't know at the time. It was like something we found out when I actually got helicoptered from Busselton to Perth, but I'd severed my femoral artery. So that's like the one on your femur.
Right.
And so they had like a really short period of time where they had to, because Busselton Hospital didn't have the capabilities, they had to fly me to RPH in Perth. So
where did the helicopter land? Did it land like right on the road? Or
no.
You got an ambulance.
They took me in an ambulance, and then they took me to Busselton Hospital, and I think the helicopter lands at Busselton Hospital, and then they flew me from there.
Was that your first time in a helicopter?
Yeah.
It was. I've never been in a helicopter, so that's kind of cool.
It was also, I was also really high on morphine, so everything was just spinning. I remember lying in the helicopter and like, because I had a neck brace on and everything because they didn't really want to trust anything. But I was just like looking up at the sky and like just hearing the chopper sounded. I felt like I was in like some disco like nightclub or something. But it was so strange because it was like I felt like I was still doing the race. Like I was just going to finish it. Like I was still doing it.
Like in your head, you were still like.
Yeah, I was still racing, and I was going to get to the finish. It was one hell of a drug. Morphine.
Well, and I was going to ask, this whole time, had you actually experienced the full pain of it yet? They pretty much once you're on morphine, you don't really feel. I actually don't know. Do you feel the pain still? Is it still or completely? You can't feel anything.
So when I had the crash and I was lying on the road and I'd looked back and I'd seen how my legs were, that was like when the pain set in and I was like, oh my God, my legs really fucked up. And it was like the worst agonizing pain that I've ever experienced. Like multiple bones just breaking is just like.
I can't even try to picture it because I don't know. I've never even broken one bone, so I can't even try to picture how it feels. I guess it's just panicking too, right? Like along with like the pain, but also you're just like, what's like, you're thinking of what's going to happen to my leg. Like,
yeah. And like, to be honest, I didn't like, I thought that cause I was, you know, so healthy and, you know, I do all the right things that, and you know, I'm young that I would just like bounce back. Like I was thinking like, oh man, I can't do Ironman South Africa. Like, you know, I'm going to have like 10 weeks off. Like, this sucks. Like, just thinking it was like one of those, like break of leg and you just put a cast on it and like everything will be all good. And like, I believed that for a fair while, especially while I was so high on the drugs and stuff. And like when I got to RPH and they rolled me in on the stretcher, I saw my parents, my family met at the hospital because they actually stayed in Perth instead of coming down south to watch. So when I saw them, I was like looking at my mum and I was like, oh, like the helicopter's a bit of overkill, don't you reckon, for like some broken bones? And mum like looked at me and she was like, no, this is like serious. You might lose your leg and like, you know,
Was that the first time you kind of knew how serious it was when your mom said that?
I was still super high. So when she was saying that, I was still like, oh, mom's just like anxious. She's like worrying.
Right.
Like, I'm going to be completely fine. Like that's what they tell people who are like have really serious injuries, not injuries like mine. And then going for my first surgery, and it was like 6 or 7 hours, and like they were just like, doing like destruction control or whatever they call it, like just trying to make sure that I'm able to get blood flow down my leg and that sort of thing. So it was like the first moment where, you know, they're trying to just save my life, like get blood flowing and everything like that. And then they took me out of that surgery, and then I had like a break, I think, for a few hours, and then they took me back in and did another surgery where they like pinned all the bones with like metal rods. And yeah, from then it was like surgery after surgery for like 2 weeks.
Like you went through, and every time you had to go under general anesthesia, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's pretty hard on your body, right? Isn't it? I thought general anesthesia. So you pretty much are like awake for a little bit, then you're going back into surgery, and then awake again. Yeah. And then, so are you like, you're probably not eating very much either, right? Because like you can't eat between these, right?
That's what I basically fasted for like 2 weeks. Like I didn't eat anything. So I was pretty darn skinny. But it was like a really horrible time. Like words can't even describe the, I guess like the loneliness and the,
Right. Well, because no one really knows what you're with your friends and family, but like you're completely alone going through it. Like no one has this happening to their leg.
Yeah. Except you. Like, yeah, it's sort of like you, and that was like the, yeah, it's like, I don't like to say it because I do get a lot of strength from my family and friends, and yeah, I'm very grateful for them. But like, I've never felt more alone than when I was in hospital and going through that. Like, I was like, you know, this is me fighting this. Like, this is me going through this. And like, really, I've only got myself to rely on throughout this whole thing. So it was like a, I don't know, introspection.
That was actually some of my questions was about your hospital stay. Cause I mean, you were in there. I mean, was there anyone else in your, I guess, unit or area that was also going to be there the same amount of time or at least similar? Like, did you have people there who are also kind of going through the same thing? Not your family or friends, but someone who's also in the same kind of boat, going to be there for 2-3 months even.
So I started out in trauma, which is like, mm-hmm, where they have all the like really serious injury patients. They keep them there, and they're like, you get one, like basically one nurse to one patient or something like that. But I had a roommate at the start, and that roommate actually died next to me.
Like, wow.
Literally got taken out the next day. I was high, but he basically like flatlined, and they had the medics all run in, try and do CPR and stuff. But anyway, they took that person out, and they brought in this 18-year-old girl who was in like a car accident, and she'd broken like her pelvis and
oh my gosh,
some bones in her arms and legs. So she was with me for like the first few weeks, and then like I got transferred into different wards the longer I stayed there. So then I went to the ortho ward, and I think I was in the ortho ward for like five or six weeks, and then across to the plastics ward for another couple of weeks, and then onto the rehab ward in a different hospital. Wow. I didn't really have one specific person that was going through similar sort of thing that I was throughout, but when I was in the ortho ward, you really get a feel for like the level of injuries that some other people are coming in with, like, you know, quadriplegics, paraplegics, like people who are probably going to deal with a lot more lifelong challenges, right, than me. And I think that at least gave me a little bit of, I don't know, just humbleness, like, you know, perspective. Yeah, like it's not that bad. Like, even though it was really bad, and to like everyone else, it was like terrible. But yeah, like I think seeing other people face difficult challenges gives you sort of strength to get through your own.
Did they pretty much have you medicated those entire 3 months? Like, or were you, I guess, sober like towards the end of it to experience? Because I feel like with that, with I've seen your leg. If for people who haven't seen John yet, you will afterwards. I'll tag. But he has a currently you have a big. What's the actual proper name for it?
It's called an Ilizarov frame.
An Ilizarov frame, and I assume that's not painful right now. But like,
it actually is very painful.
Is it okay? So I don't know. I have no idea what I'm talking about. Yeah.
No, that's all right. So when I was in hospital, I was on really hard drugs. Like, okay. I was on ketamine pretty much all the time, and really? It was like on a drip pump. So ketamine, morphine, oxycodone, lots of really strong drugs, and like it was almost to the point where I was out of it most of the time. Like I'd just be, you know, like sleeping out the days. And so I'd only really wake to say hello to someone that came into the room, and then I'd be knocked out again. And like even still now, that's like they're slowly like weaning me off, but I'm still on tapentadol, which is like a strong opioid painkiller as well. So like I'm not completely off, and I don't think I will be for quite some time, just because like it's still acute in terms of like the injury, because it's so severe. So yeah, it's very painful. Like nothing. All my past injuries really seem insignificant to this.
Yeah. Do you think that made it go faster though, the 3 months, or at least like give you some, like I assume it would make you a little more comfortable, obviously, but like so you're not so in your head. I'm just trying to picture what I would do if I was in that position. Because real quick before I let you answer, because you went from basically training 20, 25 hours a week, right? Or maybe a little less, to sitting all day, every day for like 3 months. I just sedentary, what's the word? Anyways, and I know like for me, if I skip 1 or 2 days of not exercising, I'm really anxious. I just wanted to know kind of how, I guess you said it was really lonely in the hospital, but like, was that a big part of it also? Like you were just thinking like, I want to exercise, or did the meds completely take that out of like, does that make sense?
I think like because of how bad I was and like the severity of everything, like training and exercise and triathlon, like it wasn't even in my like
mind.
Like I was like worried about dying, like losing more of my leg than I needed to. Like I was just thinking, I want to be able to live a normal life after this.
Yeah.
Like, I just wanted to be able to like, at a minimum, go to the beach with my friends and like really simple stuff. Just purely because how bad I knew it was, and like yeah, it was hard going from being really healthy and fit, and able bodied, but like it really puts everything else into perspective when things are that shit. Yeah, so
Well, I was going to say, did they they said, and for a while you didn't know if you were going to keep the leg, but you're pretty much for sure keeping it now, right? Or do we still not know?
Yeah, so it's still, so as far as my doctors are concerned, they think that I should get it amputated, and it's sort of been it's been that stance ever since I got into hospital, and literally every step of the way, the encouragement was to have it amputated. But I'm willing to take the tiniest of small chances that I, you know, miraculously gain feeling back in my foot, my bones grow together, My ACL's no longer cooked. My femur's healed. I've got to make the, I think I need to make the decision after I've tried every single thing I can do to keep my own leg. And I think like the doctors are too brisk with handing out
Right.
those sorts of recommendations. So, yeah, I think it's a doctor's recommendation, but I think like the human spirit has a different and hope has a different idea.
Well, you're also so young too. You're 28, right? Like, I feel like even if the recovery for this takes forever, it is taking a long time. But I mean, in 3 years, this could all be behind you and you could still have your leg. And I guess the doctors, so it's basically going against medical advice that you're keeping with the path of recovery of what you're doing right now.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Okay, so it still is very hard to wrap my head around, because I know like the I know you said you were going like 55 kilometers an hour into that pole, which hitting anything at 55 kilometers an hour is mess you up. But man, that's just a really bad bike wreck, because it does, even like people who get hit by cars and stuff, sometimes like I feel like that's just a really bad, and it all happened to just one leg. I wanted to ask, like, the whole time you said it was really, you said you felt really lonely, which the whole time, like, whenever you obviously got tons of visitors, right? Like, I've seen, you pretty much post it. If everyone wants to, also, people for afterwards, go look back on John's Instagram. He basically documents every single day, pretty much, right? And yeah, you look like you had a lot of visitors. But I guess the whole thing, I guess, like, did it ever feel like there is like no kind of end in sight? Like, it's been, I mean, after being there for 60 days and you still had like another 30 days left, or whatever 3 months is, right? Yeah, 90 days. Did you ever like feel like you are kind of losing this battle? Like, there's just cut it off. I'm done. I just want to go home, or.
Yeah, like when I was at RPH, which was the first hospital I was at, and that place is really not a place you want to spend a lot of time.
Yeah.
And while I was in hospital, I contracted like some really nasty infections, which was the main reason why I had to stay in hospital for so long. So the infections that I got basically were getting into all the bones. So like where all the bones are broken, there was infection going in, getting into all the tissue, everything. So it was like lots of dying muscle, necrotic muscle, tissue, bone, and it was all infected. And so they were treating me with really heavy antibiotics, but they didn't realize that I was allergic to the antibiotics that they were giving me, so that my
Right.
body was having this really bad adverse reaction. And I was at the point where I was fevering, like I had a 40 degree, 41 degree temperature. I
Wow.
was fevering every day, and I was at such a low point. I remember saying, like, well, because my parents had their head in the hand, the hands in their head, basically, like, what can we do to help our child? And I was like, Mum, Dad, I can't do this anymore. Like, if I have to do another day like this, I'd rather just die. Like, this is like literally the worst feeling ever. And like having known that, like how bad my leg was, I honestly thought that it would have been easier. But it was fortunate that the doctors actually managed to figure out what was wrong with me with the allergic reaction. And there were some really dark days, like
Yeah.
lots of dark days. And like I think it's hard to get much lower than that, really.
Did you pretty much have people with you 24/7, or were you spending nights, like at night, people went home and it was just you in the hospital bed?
So I had initially, like, obviously my family were there most of the time. I think like the first 3 to 4 weeks, the Ogging squad crew came in, like basically camped outside my room, because I wasn't allowed any visitors while I was really sick, and like I didn't want to have any visitors either, just because of how bad I was. Like, I don't think you want to, like, I didn't want to see anyone in the state that I was, because it's not
right,
not very nice. And so I had lots of visitors like throughout this whole thing. I think that's what has been like the silver lining of this whole thing, is like realizing how much support I've got from so many people, like from
you have a lot of friends,
like lots of people, and like more than what I'd ever expected. And so that's been really nice. But everyone sort of had to clear out at about 7 p.m. So, and then like, so you have people basically from like lunchtime till 7 p.m. each day, and then all the other hours you're left to your own thoughts and devices.
Okay. So you are alone for a significant amount of time. Did you, that's crazy. So that's like just, so basically that's like just really bad luck that you were allergic to antibiotics, right? That doesn't seem to happen. Is that common? That doesn't seem very, like your infections would have been avoided if you could have taken the antibiotics, right?
Well, it would have cleared out of my system a lot faster, and I probably would have got out of hospital a lot faster. But I got diagnosed with Dress syndrome, and it's like a drug reaction induced. I should know this because we talked about it today. I've got a friend that's a doctor. But it's it's like an adverse drug reaction, and apparently there's like only not many people in the world have this Dress syndrome. So they found out that I had it, and that was when they took me off the antibiotics. And unfortunately, with taking off the antibiotics, all the infection just flared up, and again, it was like all systems go with surgeries. So I was having like clear out surgeries, one after the other. And that was like, I ended up having 14 surgeries, and I think like
my God.
Wow. eight or nine of them ended up just being like, debridement, they call it. So they're like, they take out all the dead, bone and tissue and everything like that. So it was like anxious every time, because I'd go into the operating room, and I'd know that like I could potentially lose another part of my muscle and another part of my bone and another part of my, and so it was just like bad news after bad news. Like, you go in and they'd be like, all right, we debrided this, we took this much muscle out, so you now don't have this, and then you don't have this, and then you're getting like, you start to get all the bad news from the doctors being like, so you're going to have like this permanent issue. It's very serious. You're going to have to think about getting your leg amputated. Like just lots of shit operations that I had to go through.
Were you ever intubated? Like they intubated you for surgery, but like whatever you were in surgery, did it ever get to where you needed to be intubated? Like in the bed, basically.
I got a fat embolism early on while I was there. And what that is like where I've broken my bones, there's a bit of fat or something like that is dislodged, and it goes into your arteries and creates like a blockage. So that's a really serious thing, and people die from it. So I was on a ventilator, just like a nose ventilator, and it was on like 120% oxygen or something like that. So I had that pumping for like 2 to 3 weeks, I think. So all of my initial photos, I was on the ventilator, but I wasn't intubated. No.
Do you think a lot of people, if like, you're obviously really tough. I think being an athlete, like obviously being in an athletic mindset, like you're an athlete, and that I feel like that probably helped. I feel like it helps everyone to some extent going through a really tough time. Do you feel like is this something like a lot of people wouldn't have been able to do? Like, if, like, I know people, I know I've been through stuff who I feel like, yeah, this person would not have been able to do that. Is that, I guess what I'm asking is, like, do you think you handled this well? You've done very well. I mean, I from my perspective, looking at your posts and stuff, you've seemed very positive. It says, obviously, this was one of the darkest parts of your life, one of them. But do you think, like, you got through it? You're tough, but do you feel like this is something a lot of people couldn't do? Like, they just would rather just take the leg? Or, like, I guess what I'm asking, like, another question real quick, but I know I'm kind of all over the place, but if would this be all over if you basically had just said, take the leg and then we can start the prosthetic process? Would this be, like, basically over? Did they say that, like, months ago? Like, we could stop this right now. And is that,
yeah, okay? Yeah. Like, as I could have had my leg amputated after the first or second surgery, and, like, okay, I probably would have a prosthetic right now, and I'd be riding my bike and doing all that sort of stuff. So that was something that weighed on my mind as well, because I knew that, like, having my leg amputated meant that I could get back to life a lot faster. But when I thought about, like, what my life would be like, you know, when I'm 60 or 70 years old, like,
right,
I just can't imagine, you know, like, having to do physical things and be an amputee. And, like, I was around people who were amputees, and it's not easy. And I think it's also, like, glorified a little bit on social media, because people see amputees being able to do anything, like, they can do anything, but there's a very, like, small minority that I think appear there, and they're, like, very strong-willed, and they're, you know, you're amazing, and they're in the 1%, but I think it's really tough to be an amputee. And, like, that was why it was a hard decision to not take it. But I think, like, just putting myself through this, like, you know, it's a long period, but it's a short period in my whole life, so why not just give it a shot?
I that's actually a really good point, that being an, like, prosthetics and stuff is sort of glorified on social media. I feel like it doesn't, I feel like the way I even perceive it now is it doesn't look limiting at all, but you're right, that probably is still very, like, there's a guy I follow. I actually think I sent him to you. He lost his leg in a motorbike accident, and in, like, Colombia or something. I think I sent him to you, but he has a prosthetic now. But yeah, I don't know. The way they make it look, like, it does seem very, but you're still, like, that's still probably a big, like, they do, you're right, it is glorified. I don't know. It does seem like it's like, oh, well, just get a prosthetic and you're moving on with your life. But I guess it's a bigger deal than that.
Yeah. I think, like, that was Luke Tarrant, and, like, I've been following him.
Yes.
Like, basically as soon as I had the accident, my friend Bianca sent me the link. And before you'd sent it as well. And I'd been following him, and he was honestly, like, he was giving me strength. You know, if I had to have my leg amputated, like, I look at him and I'm like, look how well he's doing. But then, like, when you think about it, at the crux of it, like, I know that he just shows, like, the positives, like, this, all the positives on Instagram, but there's never like the real, like, hard negatives about being an amputee. And, like, as much as it is, like,
they don't show that,
they don't really show it. But I think may as well give it a chance. And, like, I was given the option, and, like, Luke wasn't given the option. So
yeah, he had no option. He had to get it removed, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I was fortunate in that aspect.
What do they say, like, normal life is now? Like, are you going to go back to work? Like, did you work in an office, or did you work from home?
I worked in an office, but we worked from home a little bit. So I was a consultant at, like, an accounting firm.
Oh, wow.
And I've been doing that for the last couple of years, but they've been really good. Like they've just said to me, you can come back when you're ready. Like your mental health is at the, the top of our priority. So yeah, I won't go back to work until my leg's pretty much ready. Like the recovery process is like very arduous. Like I'm having appointments, two or three times a week, and like these trips, you have to go to the hospital and you have to wait 2 hours, and then you got to, get a scan and do all this sort of stuff. So it's sort of like you're still a patient because you're still going to hospital, but yeah, it's just like a yeah, it's still a grueling process, and I don't think there's like a set time frame, because I think it's like it's when the frame comes off, it's when the infection's not a problem, it's when the nerve comes back, and then I can think about getting back to a normal life again.
Are you completely what's the word? Self-sufficient? Like, do you have help, home help, or are you like all by yourself?
No, so I'm living with my parents, and
Oh, okay.
they've kindly given me their master bedroom, so I'm in there right now. That's their painting. But yeah, so mum pretty much does everything for me. Like,
Okay. But
not
you're
that she
mobile, you
wasn't.
can walk and stuff.
I can walk with crutches,
Crutches.
but I'm trying to, like, at the moment, I'm trying to work on just walking with one crutch. But I'm doing like this bone correction thing at the moment where I have to like change the strut length in my frame, which essentially like moves the bones in and out and sort of like
Oh, I saw
irritates
that.
it to, yeah.
You posted a video of you doing that, right? I'll post yeah, it was that little those little screws, right? On your Yeah. Okay. Well, was this something like what's been like the most unexpected thing this whole process? Like, did you find out you were tougher than you thought you were, or what have you learned anything, or is this something like you just wish never happened, or what is something profound you can tell us?
I think like it really, I think I touched on it before, but like it gave me a lot of perspective, because like I was before this, like I was so stressed about so many different things, and like I was so worried about like menial, like meaningless stuff. Like at the end of the day, like being stressed at work about some particular thing, like it didn't matter. And like when I was in hospital, I was like, when I was seeing my friends and I was seeing my family, I was like, that's all that really matters in life is just like friendships and love. Like nobody's, you're not gonna die with anything other than that. Like that was probably like the biggest thing, and I think it's given me a lot more perspective now, like being out of hospital, and I can see myself like getting back into my old way of thinking and being stressed about things and worrying, and I'm like you're so good, like you've come this far, you've gotten through that really difficult time, and like you're at a point where like you thought that you would never walk, and then you thought that you'd never be able to do anything or ride a bike or whatever, and now you're like walking on a crutch. And so it's just like just be grateful for just being able to like do stuff, like going for a ride, or even just like getting out of bed in the morning. Like being able to get out of bed in the morning, it was just massive for me. Like in hospital, I was stuck on my back the whole time. So I think if anyone can take something away, it's like if you've got a healthy body, then just use it. Like just move it and be happy that you're in good
You
health, because
can.
it's like, yeah, exactly. Like health is wealth, so make the most of it.
What did that feel like coming home after spending 3 months in the hospital? Did they just Like, was that your first time seeing your house, or I guess your parents' house, since you were gone, since you left for Busselton?
Yeah, so I mean, it's completely different because I'm in the master bedroom, but yeah, it's like a like especially when I first got home and I was still quite incapable to move around. It was sort of realizing how crippled I actually was. Like, you know, I couldn't really do much. Take myself to the toilet. So yeah, it's like when I was in hospital, I really, really looked forward to coming home because I was like, you know, home is like the finish line. Like once I get home, you know, I'll be healthy, I'll be good again. And then when I finally got here, I was like, it's actually like I'm still really, you know, I'm like really injured and I can't do anything. Yeah. It's basically the same as the hospital. But yeah, so that was like, that was hard to come to terms with. But I think now that I've got like a routine built in and I'm going to the gym every day and working out, like I'm so over the moon with just being able to do that. So if I can do that, then I'll stay happy.
Yeah, I saw you're at the gym. Are you allowed to get in the pool with that? Probably not, right?
No, I can't get in the pool or the ocean. But I've been,
it's open, right?
Yeah, it's all open. So they're really worried about infection and stuff. So they have to clean it every day and like all this sort of stuff. But yeah, I like go to the gym and I use the ski erg, which is like the one where you pull the cords down.
Yeah.
So I do that one. And then I also do like the rowing machine as well. And then like some like arm exercises. So I'm able to do something. It's not triathlon, but it's exercise and movement.
No, but I'm sure that even just a little bit of movement gets you like some endorphins, some sort of just feeling better. I think so. You've had your friends and family, they've been there the whole time through this, because one of my questions was who's been your rock through all this, but you pretty much said that you've, I mean, I also seen on all your stories, but you have tons of friends. You always have someone there, it looked like. Did it feel like you like had like, could you tell people like, yeah, people are there with you, but they weren't quite understanding at all, like what you're feeling? And like, I guess that's what you mean by you felt alone, right? Because they don't have no really perspective of like, that you're stuck with this and they're not.
Yeah, that's right. Like, I think it's easy to like look in from like windows, basically, I feel like, if that's a good metaphor. But like,
that is a good metaphor.
Yeah, I sort of like, I felt like a bit of a zoo or a monkey or something. Like, I'm just there, like getting thrown around and taken through the ringer, and everyone else is like coming in from their normal lives where they, you know, go to work and they do whatever they want, and then they come in and see me, who's the
well, that's what I was kind of getting at, because a lot of people, they're all still kind of in their normal life and you are completely taken out of your normal life and in something completely new, which obviously is really hard. I don't really have any. I just want to say I'm impressed, because I've been following it from day one, and I guess since you've, I really, really liked that you updated like your whole journey on social media. I think, I'm sure it's helped a lot of people. Like you said, the guy, what's his name, Luke something. He's helped you, so I'm sure you're helping other people. I guess it's really. I just think it's really cool that you documented it all. And like, I know it's also probably at times you probably didn't want to post anything or write or like be anywhere on social media, right? Like, it just felt like I when I've been super sick, I've basically felt like not posting. So I can't imagine the other, like, does that make sense what I'm asking?
Yeah. Yeah. There were days where like, it was funny because at the beginning, I think I posted pretty much daily and, When it started getting not very good, I just like it got worse and worse, and then it was hard to be positive, and I think I stopped a couple of days, and then I had like a whole bunch of people messaging me being like, what's wrong, what's happened, like, you know, how are you, what's going on? So I tried to stay on top of it, purely because I wanted to keep everyone across what was happening, and like, as you said, maybe provide a little bit of motivation for other people to appreciate being healthy and like making sure that they're making the most of it. So yeah, and I think it was almost like therapeutic as well, me like writing down my thoughts for the day. And it's been really good since coming back here, and like I'm able to, you know, scroll back through the posts and be like, far out, like look how far
you've come
since then. So yeah, it's been like a really good experience, and like it's getting harder now to keep on posting updates because there's not really much happening, but you know, I'm going to try my best to keep everyone in the loop because I think people are invested now, so
you have a lot of people invested. You really do. Do you think about, I guess we'll probably wrap it up here, but I guess I definitely, do you think about like what, do you try to just take it one day at a time right now? Or are you already like thinking of are you taking it one day at a time still? Like little small victories, like today I don't know. Or are you just trying to keep it compartmentalized, or and like stopping yourself from thinking, I can't wait to bike again, I can't wait to walk again, or how are you doing that mentally?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with like living it, you know, day by day. Like I can't look too far ahead because I just don't know what it's going to be like. And also like it kind of upsets me or stress me out when I like think about what, you know, what the future might hold. And I think all I can do is really like just focus on the here and now, and like, each day, just look for the good in each day. Like each morning I'm always looking for like that slightly little bit less pain when I put weight on my leg, or, you know, feeling a little bit stronger in the gym, or, so it's just like trying to find the small wins and just taking it day by day.
Have you found like a separate hobby besides like, do you do something since you can't train, or I guess you're like not, would you call yourself immobile? I guess immobile. Have you found like a different hobby or something besides like, I feel like I would have to do something besides just scroll on my phone. Did you like draw or something, or have you done something in the past that you didn't think that you never had time for, or?
I'll tell you what, I've been doing way too much. My screen time's like up 8 hours a day, basically. Yeah. It's not good, but I'd say my hobby is going to the gym, or I'm doing running ogging, and that's not very much, but it's probably just thinking about those two things really all day. And then obviously like I have people that come and visit me as well still, like while I'm at home, and they take me out for like a coffee or something like that. But I'm trying to use the time that I have where I'm not working full time, and I'm just, you know, focusing on myself to catch up with people that I haven't spoken to in a long time, and foster broader relationships, I think, because like I think you can sort of get stuck in a little tiny bubble. Keeping busy that way.
Do you have a dog? Do you have any pets?
I've got a cat, Delilah.
Okay.
And
that has to help some, right?
Yeah. She looks after me. She's super old. She's like 18 years old, and she's a bit geriatric, but she's great little lap cat. She's just always like lying on my lap, and I think she knows that I'm a trustworthy lap because I just don't move. I just stay in the same spot all day. So she's just like, oh, sick. That's so good.
I heard that I heard the act of like petting a pet, petting a dog or cat, like lowers blood pressure. So it's like immediately lowers blood pressure in humans if you pet a dog or a cat. So that's good that you have her. I guess. Yeah. Do you have anything you want to share else that like, yeah, cause I know a lot of, so I've had people follow me who've had injuries and like, I've talked about, yeah, I guess, is there anything you'd want to say to like someone who might be in the same position, or is there anything you just want us to know about your journey or what's next? Cause real quick, before I let you answer that, I'd love to have you again on the podcast for like a 3-month update or something from like, maybe like next in like 3 months from now or something, and to see how you're doing. But yeah, is there anything you want to tell us and like share?
Yeah. No, I'm keen to do that in a few months' time as well. I think I've had a few people reach out to me sort of explaining their situations and saying that they've gotten strength with what I'm going through and the mindset that I'm taking. And I think like when they're telling me like, oh, I've got this injury and like, you know, it's really shit. And the advice I give is like, it's only going to be a really small part of your life. Like you're going to be alive for a really long time. And this is just going to be like a tiny part of your story. And like the only thing it's going to do is just like make you grow as a person. And like, yeah, don't think of it as like, you know, like a really negative thing, like turn it into a positive thing. Like what are some things you can now focus on because you're not doing, you know, you're not doing a particular thing. It's like, I'm going to take up another hobby. That's awesome. I never would have taken up that hobby. Like, you know, there's a lot of positives that you can take out of, you know, injuries and setbacks. And, it's not like a, you know, it's not a roadblock. It's just a redirection. So, yeah, I think there's lots of good things still to come in your life. And
yeah, does that help you when people reach out to you? Like it helps, like, well, it's like it helps you like, oh, wow, I'm inspiring other people. That's actually inspiring me to keep it up, keep positive.
Yeah, I think so. Like it's nice to know that like I'm having a positive impact on people, because like who doesn't want to have a positive impact? I think like when I was – you know, when I'm at work, you know, in the corporate tower or whatever, like I'm not really making a proper positive impact, I think, in the same way as I am now. So I think like it's helped with giving me a bit of purpose, like especially like, you know, when I've lost a lot of my identity, like, you know, obviously like I put a lot of emphasis on being an athlete and being fast. Yeah. And, you know, like I've shaped my whole life out of being that person. And so like having that taken away is like being, you know, it's just not nice. And it's probably the worst part of really this whole situation is like losing that part of me. But, yeah, I'm just grateful that, like at least my mindset throughout this and has made a positive impact and people getting strength from it to get through their own issues. So yeah, it's a I think social media has been a good thing, as much as it's not a good thing for some things, but
yeah,
I think it has been quite powerful in this.
Do you have any surgeries left? Probably, right? Have you more like, yeah. Are they like,
yeah, so I've got so depending on how my bones heal over the next few weeks, I may need a bone transplant. So they take like
a bit of bone
from your hip or like another body part, and then they transplant it in the areas which don't have enough bone coverage. So I might have that if this doesn't work. And then I've also got like an exposed tendon from where they did like the skin grafts that hasn't healed. So it's actually like, it's not very good because it's like dying tendon that's causing the graft to not grow over. So I may need to have surgery to get that debrided again, which sucks. But yeah, it's just kind of comes with the injury.
Right. Well, John, where can everyone follow you? Actually, I'll put all his socials in the descriptions of the video and on Spotify and wherever you guys listen to this podcast. But I guess your Instagram, two Instagrams, right?
Yeah.
And I want to say I know other people. I know what we just talked about, how people are I am enjoying, not enjoying, what's the word? Just I like seeing your post and I like seeing your progress. So it is inspiring to me, and I'm not injured. Right now I'm not. I have been, but not like you. but I, I just want to say thank you for coming on and sharing this. This, because I actually haven't really heard the full story either. I know what happened and that, but yeah, I didn't know that you were, I knew that you were seeing bone. I didn't know, like, you basically were, like, on the side of the road and, like, you saw multiple bones, not just one bone. You saw, yeah, that's pretty heavy stuff. That's very heavy stuff. Thank you for sharing that with us. I'll have all of John's social media and everything, and you guys can go see what he looks like and what we've been talking about for the last hour. Thank you so much, John, for coming on. And everyone, thank you all for listening. This has been another episode of Noodle On with Noel. I'm Noel, and this is our guest, John. And have a good week.
Thanks so much for having me, Noel.